What's the day? Today's the 26th.
June 26th.
Yeah, today is the 26th of June, 2018. I believe this is the 38th interview.
Wow.
we've done, and it's a pleasure today to be talking with Jerry Ross. And Jerry, I usually just ask you to go back and maybe recall some events of your early days in Epworth and your family background and maybe grade school and all that stuff.
Yeah, grade school goes all the way to St. Pat's. Dad ran the station in town, and of course Buck got all his gas and everything there, so I knew Buck before I ever got to high school.
Okay.
We finally got to high school, and my freshman year I was about a 5'6" kid, a little bit pudgy, and Jim O'Meara, we talked about, was my freshman basketball coach, and I didn't play much until maybe the last couple games of the year. But then when I had Hermie as a sophomore, I went for my physical and I was 6 foot.
Big growth spurt.
Yeah, so all that stuff Jim taught me. You know, I didn't use it freshman year, but I used it ever after. My freshman year, Finley was a first-year teacher.
Okay.
So I had him for...
Was that 68, 9?
Yeah, it would have been the fall of 68.
Okay, yeah.
68, 69. And I had him for general business. And I think I got a B-plus the first semester. And then the second quarter, I picked it up. And so Finn gave me an A-plus. And that rounded out to an A. And Buck called him into the office and said, "We don't give A-pluses." So I got an A-minus, A and B-plus rounded to an A-minus. But Finn always talks about that.
How about some of your other teachers back?
I had Phil Beery for math classes those first couple years, and had Hine my senior year for senior math, Doc Shio for biology. Let's see, who did I have for... I had Forky 1 year for English, Tommy Roach freshman year, Al Eid junior year, and then Lois Tyson senior year for English.
Those were years... was that also right when the portables first started to show up?
They were already there.
Okay.
There was a lot of them. There was 20-some. We had the two out in front, and there was a whole bunch behind. You know, like with Danner's retirement and stuff, and mine and whatever, they talk about how we're kind of the passing guard. But sometimes I think we need to go back to you and Hine and Deleary and Doc Shiel and all those people, because they're really the ones that started this family that became Western Dubuque.
Okay.
You know, we were just smart enough to keep it going.
You hooked on.
Hopefully the kids after us will keep it going too. But
So that was 68-69 then. Was that kind of the start of the football program at that point? Or
no, we never had football. Football kind of started the year after I graduated. In 73, yeah.
So you played basketball, of course.
Yep, basketball. And then we played baseball in the fall and the spring because we didn't have football. So because we played in the fall, then you played in the spring, well, then that kind of took track out of the picture because you had the two baseball seasons. Sophomore year, we were pretty good. And then junior year, we actually made the semifinals. We got beat by Norway. That Kim fella.
Bruce Kim.
He played for Norway.
Dick McVay played.
I don't know if McVay played for them, but I don't think he played against us.
But was that in the fall or the spring?
That would have been in the fall.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember Kim hit a ball that hit the top of the fence, but I think it barely cleared the shortstop.
Wow.
He just smoked it. And then Norway beat us that year.
Where'd you play it?
I think we played in Norway. And then the next year, our senior year, we made the finals. Played Granville Spalding in the finals. We were up 3-0. Ended up getting beat 4-3.
So you, what positions did you play then?
The last year I played, well, we had three pitchers. We had Frank Dardis, Bobby Faber, and Johnny Smith. So when Johnny pitched, I played first. And that was probably our best defensive team because I was better at first. Frank then was in center, Frank Dardis, and he was the best center fielder. Bobby Faber was at third, and he was the best third baseman. So when Bobby pitched, then I played third. And then when Frank pitched, I played center.
Okay.
So I just filled in wherever. It was exciting.
Well, yeah.
We could have won it, but...
So then you transitioned from fall baseball into basketball?
Yep, we'd finish baseball, and there was usually a short stint in there where basketball hadn't started yet. So we'd generally go out and run cross country on the JV docket. And so we'd get out there and run, and that, you know, got us in shape. And Hermie let us do that. He wouldn't let us be varsity, but he'd let us run JV and practice with him and everything.
Okay.
Then we'd go into basketball in our sophomore year. I think we were 14-3. And had a good season. Then our junior and senior year, both those years, I think we were 15-6. My junior year would have been like Greg Featherston's senior year, Stoney.
Okay.
And Ray LaSance, Terry McDermott.
The Eastern Iowa Conference.
Yep. We got a break in the tournament and got away from Dubuque. They sent us up to Starmont. We had beat Starmont by 15 points the week before, and we went up there and laid an egg and got beat in the first freaking round.
Were there classes? I mean...
Yeah. I know there was at least two classes.
Had to be at least back in there. It would have been, at least two classes.
Maybe two or three. I don't think there was four yet. And then senior year, we had to play Wallert. Went back to Dubuque. And I think we were up at the quarter. We're down by a little bit at the half. We were still within five of them at the third quarter. And then they had big Bob Wagner and Scott Peterson. And we just had to be perfect because with their height.
Yeah.
And finally, they kind of wore us down. I think we ended up getting beat by 12. But it was a good game.
Okay. So how many were in your class?
I want to say about 175.
Okay.
Because we were before St. Joe's closed. Right. We still had the Cascade kids coming up. Remember Herbie Ashton, who was a year younger than me, a year older than me, going out for track his senior year, and I think he still holds the 200-meter record.
He's kind of a legend. I mean, I've heard his name brought up so many times.
You know, he didn't participate in anything until that senior year.
How did it happen that he all of a sudden came out? Or
I don't know. I don't. You know, maybe he wasn't there all 4 years either. Maybe he just came up as a junior. I don't remember all that. I just remember he came out that senior year. He set records, and then being a track coach, I know he still has that 200 record. Pretty crazy.
So you got to your senior year and had some thoughts, decisions to make about your future?
Yeah, I thought about playing football right away. And the coach for Upper Iowa actually came down and talked to some of us about it. And then I ended up going to Loras. And freshman year at Loras, I played baseball and swam. The swimming coach, I had a swimming class, talked me into try swimming. So then I swam all 4 years. I only played baseball that 1 year. That was the year of the snowstorm of 73.
Okay.
We had like 25 JV games scheduled, and that snowstorm came in on like the 13th or whatever, and just wiped out probably 2 weeks of the season. And after that, they had two varsity games every night, so there weren't any pitchers left to have a JV season, so basically eliminated it.
Okay.
And then the next year, I just swam. And then my junior year, some guys talked me into trying football. And, I learned a lot that first year. And then the second year, I was just about ready to crack the starting lineup, and then I sprained an ankle up at Maranatha, Wisconsin, and I pretty much finished my season. And then my senior year I played, I guess actually my fifth year, I played defensive tackle almost full-time and some offensive tackle too.
Okay.
But I didn't get into education until second semester sophomore year. I knew I wanted to do chemistry, but I decided that second semester to go the education route, and I couldn't get all the classes in, so I had to go back and that fifth year.
Okay, did you drive back and forth? How'd you do
first that? 4 years I drove back and forth, and then the last year I stayed in there.
Okay.
Roomed with Pat Feeney, a Cascade kid.
Okay.
We had a good relationship.
Okay. How about some of your professors that you recall?
Al Schramm and Pat Flanagan were probably the two most influential instructors or professors I had as far as developing into a teacher and a coach and a professional and so forth. Kenny Krause was my advisor, and he taught organic chemistry. He was a good guy. My sophomore year, I kind of dawdled a little bit. Actually ended up getting a D in organic chemistry.
Okay.
So then when I had to go back for that semester, I took organic over, and Kenny let me take it over without the lab and basically aced the class. And one day I was in his office, and he said, Jerry, he said, what the hell's going on here? He says, I'm looking at this D and I'm looking at this A. And I said, well, Mr. Krause, you met a man who grew up somewhere in between there.
That's cool.
But
any other professors that come to mind? Or
those are the guys that were probably most influential. And we had Doc White for history, and he always lectured with his eyes closed.
I had him too. That's the first thing I remember is he was always eyes closed.
Eyes closed.
Great guy.
He said he'd lose his train of thought if he was looking his eyes closed. He could keep.
He sees it up there.
Yep.
Okay, so you got to conclusion of your college career.
I went to senior and student teach. And I think Harold was actually an assistant principal there at the time.
Okay.
I talked to Barr. Barr was also an assistant principal.
Danny Barr,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I was in the chemistry department. That was kind of his piece. So I interviewed with him summer. He let you come in and give you a mock interview,
Okay.
and talk to you about things. So he was a good egg. Jim Prohaska was my supervising teacher. He officiated forever. He's actually a board member in Dubuque now.
Jim was my starting point guard.
Was he?
My first year of coaching. Yes, he was, and he was a good one. In fact, I had him for 2 years. So. And, yeah.
So he was, got me going down the right track. Was looking for a job, and there was a possible interview in New Hampton, and then a job opened up down at Regis. It was general science with would have been a freshman football position, so I talked to Coach Good down there.
Okay.
And then on the way back, I stopped at the junior high because I'd heard there was a math spot open. Didn't know if I was really interested in that or not. Talked to Wick and talked to Drex. And along with that, there was an assistant football with Kevin O'Neill. And Gay Wilker wanted to get out of girls' track, so girls' track went on along with it. I never in my wildest dreams ever dreamed that I would coach girls' track, maybe men's track.
Okay.
But
that's the way it turned out.
I coached that freshman year and coached it forever after that. Or that first year at the middle school. Actually, it was called junior high then. Were you there my first year?
I can't remember if it was. I probably was.
I think it was the first year. No, it was my. Or was it second year? But Brian Hyduk was there my first year.
Okay.
And then he went to the annex.
He went to the annex and I came over from after that. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So I remember that one young gentleman by the name of Pat. I won't say his last name, but...
Pat.
He was causing some problems and I finally sent him to you.
Okay.
And... I didn't have too much trouble with him after that.
Okay.
He wasn't a bad kid. He was a eighth grade kid that just couldn't keep his mouth shut. But he never missed a day of school. But that first year, I had seven classes of seventh grade, and Jack Wolf had eight classes of eighth grade. And about halfway through the year, I said, Jack, I'm going crazy teaching seven classes of the same stuff. I get to the end of the day and I keep hearing the same questions, which you would expect.
Yeah.
But I find myself almost getting short sometimes because I answered that already, five times already. Jack said, yeah, I agree. So then that next year we split it so that...
Okay, yeah, makes sense.
We had half seventh, half eighth. And
yeah.
Both of us were happier. So then I had the girls' track and... football, then O'Neill moved up to freshman, and then I was head eighth grade for a couple years in there. The third year I actually moved over to the annex to teach.
What'd you teach at the annex then?
The annex I taught math and physical education.
Okay.
I had to take two classes to get my math endorsement. You know, I had a semester of pre-calc and three semesters of calculus in college, but I couldn't get an endorsement until I had an algebra class and a geometry class.
That's pretty weird. So, where did you take that at?
I took the geometry at Clark with Sister Spiegel. Her sister used to live just outside of the ballpark up there.
Oh, that's Virginia?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then... I actually took the algebra class correspondence through Iowa. That's the only way I could make it work with my schedule.
Yeah.
That was a tough class because you'd get stuck on something and you had nobody to ask.
Nowhere to go.
So you'd just go back to the book and pretty soon you'd figure it out. And by the time you got done, you understood it pretty well, but it was a lot of work. So then the annex... I was there for that one year, and then the next year, they closed that.
Okay.
And I went to the high school. And then down there, I taught first year of general science and general math. And then a year or two after that, it was 80, it would have been 80, 81. I got the chemistry. They gave me the chemistry, and... They had Helen Williams teach the general science, I guess.
Okay. That would have been, is that about Helen's last year then? Or?
Yeah, pretty close. She might have went a couple years after that.
So you made that transition to the high school, and so you're pretty well, from that point you taught Same classes, pretty much?
Pretty much. That first year, I also got the varsity girls track then.
Right away.
That sport I didn't think I would.
Who had that before?
Chuck Bailey.
Okay.
Bailey wanted to get into baseball. And he told me, he said, if I get the baseball job, you can have the track job.
Okay.
And Chuck wasn't real into track anyway.
Yeah.
And I remember that first year, there'd be a call in the sky. We're going to have practice tonight? Yeah. If there was any chance of rain, I don't think they had practice before that.
Okay.
But Kathy Simon was a senior that year, and Chris Parman was a junior.
We had some good kids there.
She transferred in, and those two got to state. Kathy, she actually ran a school record at state that year, and it lasted until Brett Corey broke it in maybe 2015, so that was 30-some years.
Yeah.
That record stood. And
there was a girl that was, I don't know, she might have even been in junior high, was really good. I don't remember if she got to high school or not, or she transferred someplace else. I can't remember what her name was. It was about the time of Chris Parman.
Lori Pettyjohn.
That's who it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I coached her at the junior high, and then she actually moved to Maquoketa. They moved to Maquoketa.
Okay.
And I saw her once or twice down there, but I think she kind of got in the wrong crowd down there and never really developed. But at the Wash Relays that year, she won the long jump, the 100 hurdles, and I think the 100 maybe.
Yeah, she was she had some ability.
Yep. And Parman, she came in from South Winnie with Phil when he got the job at NICC. And we talked her into coming out, and Carrie Hermson kind of had a big part of that. And she got to state that junior year, and then her senior year, she ran 12 flat at Starmont in the 100. That's still the school record. And then at the state meet, she ran a 25.66 or 65, something like that, which is still the school record. And I believe she got third. She couldn't beat this girl by the name of Natasha Kaiser.
I remember the name.
Who earned gold medals in the Olympics in the 400 meter down the road later. But I remember she came up. She was from Des Moines. Des Moines, I believe Roosevelt, but it was a Des Moines school. But Chris came up and she felt terrible. She felt so bad. Oh, I wanted. And I said, Chris, you ran the fastest you've ever run in your life. You have nothing to feel bad about.
Yeah.
And, she was a sweetheart. But that would have been 82 when Chris did those. And Susie Hollenbeck was a freshman then.
The class of 80, that was a good class of kids, as I recall.
We had a good group in there.
A lot of good athletes.
One year we won the district down at Cedar Rapids. It's the only time girls track we've ever won a district. We've always had to go against the big schools, and generally they just have too much firepower for us.
Yeah.
And the funny part of it was we only won one event that night. Carla Waxter won the 100 hurdles, but we placed pretty high in everything.
Yeah.
And ended up pulling it out. I remember Harold Wilkinson. We were just getting on the bus, and he stuck his head in the window and said, or the door, and said, "Hey, great job, girls." Okay. I always appreciated him for that.
Yeah.
He coached at Kennedy then.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some years we were really good, and some years not so good.
Yep. You guys had a pretty good amount of kids that were involved.
Yeah, we always. Those early years, we'd be pretty close to 40, and then they started tennis, and that hurt us. Dropped us back probably 30 to 35 because kids had more options, which was great, you know. And then we got back to where we had probably consistently between 40 and 45. Then we started soccer.
Okay.
Knocked us down again, and then those later years, we were back to where we had usually 40 to 50 kids.
Okay.
Some years, just a hair over 50. So that went pretty good.
We won. Well, it was always, I remember, boy, the afternoons walking up that hill, and, you know, for a track meet, the wind was just be.
Yeah, it was always windy.
And it was just raw, you know.
Yeah, Parman still has the Bobcat record for the 100, and she ran that on the ag line.
Well, okay.
And it still holds up today on the...
That's quite a...
You know what? I think last year I helped at the meet. I think a girl from Marion broke it last year.
Is that right?
I think so. She ended up placing high at state. So it held up from 82 till...
Wow, that's...
On kitty litter.
That's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. How about... Okay, your football coaching.
It was freshman, that first year I came over, I was assistant with Danner. Freshman assistant. And Kilberg and those guys, Kirk Kilberg and Chris Knutson and Kevin Linsman.
Yeah.
I had those guys at the middle school that year before when I was teaching at the annex or the junior high. So they followed me over. Chris Hager was in. They were a good bunch of kids. They, you know, understood what you were trying to teach them. And I remember Hager, I always told him, if any back ever crosses your face, you sit on him. And one night a kid did that, and they threw a screen pass out there. Hager took it the other way.
Okay.
But they were a good group. And then when we had the... See, I think Herb finally retired. Or maybe Al Kleesner. When Al Kleesner left, I think that's when I took the varsity, like, special teams coach.
Okay, that makes sense. I remember that.
And then in 88 or whatever it was, shared time went away. And then Craig Dirks got riffed because of the shared time. He ended up taking a job at Monty then, and then Killer promoted me to defensive coordinator. I really understood line play and linebacking play. And at freshman level, they didn't have too many kids that could throw much for passes. So the toughest part of that for me was to truly understand how that defensive play worked.
Okay.
In the backfield, you know, the D-backs and stuff. Came around pretty good.
Yeah. So that takes you into the 90s. Pretty good years for football.
And we had some good teams in there. 96, we made the semifinals with Joe Streif as our running back.
You know, I saw Joe at Friday night.
Yeah.
I visited with him.
It's the first time I've seen him in quite a while.
And, he says, you know, when I was a freshman, I wasn't very big. He says, and I didn't want to really mix it up. He says, and I wanted to be a running or a
wide receiver.
So I got out there, and he says, Danner says, no, you get in here, you're going to be a running back. And he said, yeah, he says that worked out pretty good.
Yep.
But the thing I remember about him sticks in your mind in the Unidome. We'd kick off, and he'd run down that field, and then he'd cut across, and he'd nail that fucking ball carrier.
Yeah.
God, that was impressive.
Yeah, he was a good kickoff guy, special teams guy that way.
He'd fly.
Yeah. He's a hell of a running back, too. I don't think he ever got knocked down by the first contact. We had some good linemen in front of him.
Yeah. But lots of good athletes in those years.
And we made the playoffs a lot of times through there. And we always got beat the first round. And every team that beat us up until 96 in the first round played the finals. We just had the shitty draw of always pulling the number of years they were the champs.
The other thing I remember was that I think the first year we played in the Unidome, I think we played way with a Shell Rock. And we got to the half, pretty close, and there was time for one play, and Waverly had the ball.
We get beat down the sideline.
And whoever was playing the D-back, I thought, tackle him, don't let him get the ball. He obviously didn't, so.
Yeah, there was a mix-up back there. I think Robbie Sherman was one of the guys.
I think
somebody
it was,
else.
Yeah.
They just didn't quite communicate. One thought the safety was coming over and the one didn't. And the biggest problem with coaching in the Dome was if you could see something happening, you couldn't tell anybody because it was so damn loud.
Yeah.
You could scream and yell and holler and they couldn't hear you.
Couldn't hear you.
No. No.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, we won, you know, the championship in 01. In my mind, I thought we had a better team the year before. But
yeah, we were bigger. You know, Jay might have been the glue that made all that go together. Jay Lehman.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just threw the ball. He'd throw to Ziesmer a lot. And Ziesmer would run that route, and Jay'd throw the ball, but he almost always threw it where if the receiver didn't get it, nobody was going to get it.
Okay.
You know, like if the receiver's here and the D-back was here, the ball was always away from that D-back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he was really good. He was a squirrel in the hallways. But in that huddle, he really took control. I don't even like Elgin wouldn't challenge him in the huddle, I don't think.
The other thing I remember about that game was I came over, I think that Friday, you know, breakfast uptown, the coaches were there, and you guys were talking about the kid from Worthington. They weren't sure if he was going to be able to play. Feldman?
Was it Feltus?
Feltus. He made the interception in the last play.
Feltus. Yeah, his dad was in that wreck up there that time, and he was actually in prison that he hit those two kids from Dyersville.
Okay.
There was a Reese girl, and I forget who the other one was. It was a boy. But Pac, we called him. Nathan Feltus.
Yeah, that's who it was.
And you know, he was played quite a bit as a sophomore, as a junior, and then that senior year, Ricky Willenbring and some of those kids came in, and you know, Ricky had an unbelievable sense for the ball. There were times I remember one time in the Dome, he knocked a pass down. And he go, "What the hell, Rick? What the hell were you doing back there, Coach? I just knew that's where it was going."
Yeah.
Okay.
Rick, I play golf with his dad all the time now. Rick's a physical therapist.
Yep. Yep, I see him from time to time. But that last play when Pac picked it off, we had taken the safety. We had it like in on the 20-yard line or whatever.
Yeah, I was down there someplace.
Yep, and we called timeout, and Killer says, "Should we take the safety?" And I said, "Well, if we take the safety, the worst thing can happen, as long as we don't let them in zone, the worst thing can happen is a tie." I said, "I think we should." So Killer goes out, and he told Mike, the punter, Mike Elgin, who had a 74-yard punt earlier in the game, to be able to pin him on the other end of the field, he said, you kind of stand there and then run back and run around, and you run around as long as you can back there
Okay.
In the end, and get back to the end zone, and before you get tackled, you step out of the end zone.
Okay.
Because we didn't want him to get tackled and risk the fumble.
Yeah.
But we wanted to burn as much time as we could. So Killer's out there telling this. Mike goes, Coach, he says, what if I look out there and I think I can get the first down? No!
Awesome. Oh, God.
So then we had Schramm kick it. There was a minute and something left. And we played straight defense because we were afraid if we went into a prevent that they would have enough time to be able to run it at us.
Yeah.
And they got completed a play, got some more. And then finally they got to, they were probably inside the 30.
No, they were, it was down there.
Getting close. And I thought, there's the times now, they're out of timeouts. They got to throw the ball. Yep. They can't run it anymore. Because if they get tackled, the game's over. So we switched to what we called a prevent or a five-man D-back system. And Osborne, their quarterback, who ended up going to Northwest Missouri State and went on the Division II World or National Championship, he didn't recognize it. He threw it right to Feltus.
Yeah, I remember. I don't know. There wasn't much time left.
No, it was within a minute then.
Yeah.
Because all we had to do was kneel on it. But that was great for him, for the Feltus kid.
Oh, man.
You know, I see him. He was actually managing the Worthington baseball town league team.
Is that right?
A few years back. He came out really good.
Hmm. Yeah, that was amazing. We're up into the 2000s, so you kept on with the girls' track and
yep.
Took the head football.
Took that for 3 or 4 years, and then that AD spot opened up. So their assistant AD, and back when I got my master's in, would have been 86, I had an emphasis in athletic administration, and I did a couple of interviews places after that, and just never found the place where I wanted to go. But then when that opened up, I thought, I'm going to try that. So I did. I remember the first thing Dave Hager, after he got the job, he says, hey, he said, this concession stand's a real mess. He said, fix that, will you? Thanks, Dave.
Okay, thanks a lot.
But we got it to work.
Was that when the new one was put in, or?
Well, it was just the way the booster club was in charge of it, and they were kind of splitting it off with Ben and Volko, and they just weren't getting any money out of it. They yeah. weren't making anything. So went in and I said, athletics is going to do 50% of the slots. Band can have, or 40%. Band gets 20. Volko gets 20. FFA gets 20. And then it was based on how many slots you worked, and I set it up to where the football games, football or athletics worked 40% of the slots, and then 20, 20, 20. And I had to get those people to trust me, the band and vocal people, because they were kind of convinced that they were going to get ripped out of this deal. And I know Dave Eartham was the band guy, and he saw what I was trying to do, and he thought he jumped on board right away.
Yeah.
Took a little harder to get the vocal people.
Yeah.
But then in the end, we each worked a different part of the football, and they had the same percentage of the basketball games and whatever, and they said, well, how do we get paid? I said, after the season's over, we'll take the gross receipts, and
there you go.
40, 20, 20, 20. Doesn't matter what events you work, because it'd be broken up evenly. Otherwise, how do you...
Oh, that'd be a nightmare.
okay, athletics works the football games? Well, that's huge.
Yeah.
So worked out pretty good. And then FFA had trouble filling spots, so then we cut them back to 10, and then athletics got 50%. It worked out pretty well.
Okay, so, you know, that period of time, well, I retired in 01, and, you know, I was seeing eventually everybody was going to retire, and I was always kind of worried about how it was going to go as far as we had such a great staff, so stable for so many years. And what's been your take as far as how the transition's gone?
You know, I think it's gone really well. When I started, Carl and all those guys were there, you know. And most of those guys had taught me, and a lot of them had. Danner came in. Things evolved a little bit. You know, Hine and some of those guys got out. McGandrew came in to teach biology. You know, and lately Libby Kleesner and Manning and all these people that have come in have evolved very well to, you know, like, I don't know if Manning was the best teacher when he walked in the door, but over the course of 2 or 3 years, I mean, I think he's as solid as anybody now.
Who's this?
Matt Manning.
Oh, Matt Manning. What's he teach?
He's special ed.
Okay.
So, you know, just people needed time to evolve, right, and find out what West Dubuque was about.
Yeah.
So I think it's really transitioned pretty well.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, I think it'll keep going. You know, I started with the chemistry. Doc Shield was next door to me. And when I was in high school, Doc taught me, but he never was one to get too close to the kids.
No.
You know, I mean,
he was Mr. Rigid.
Yep, and I learned a lot from him. And then when I became a teacher, God, he helped me with a lot of ideas and things, and a lot of it probably indirectly. Mm-hmm. You know, where we'd just be bullshitting or talking about something, and you just learn from the transition or the communication there. Of course, Hine. You know, there's a guy who's learned a lot from him, not only in classroom stuff, but like with the association.
Yeah.
You know, him and Herman
were involved in negotiations from the beginning, pretty much, weren't you? Or?
Well, not right away. It was the late 80s when those guys talked me into being president. And I remember the first thing I did as president was sign a grievance that we would get our phase two money every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know. I just had to trust Lois and Hermie and Carl and those guys that they were telling me believe what they said was right and do it. Then it was my second year we lost the shared time. So we had 20 riffs. Boy, that was tough to work through.
Oh, that was, you know, we lost good people there.
Yep.
That was what I felt bad about.
We managed to keep some good people
in
the process, too.
You know, the guy I always regret is Tom O'Brien.
Yeah.
What a gifted teacher. In fact, Tom, he's, I'm not sure where he's at now, but he was at Medical Associates for a while.
He's with another company now that brokers. In fact, West Dubuque just hired him to broker their insurance over the next couple of years. No? I think it might be an offshoot of some sort.
Anyway, a few years ago he contacted me and he asked me to write up a recommendation for him because he said, I always wanted to be a teacher. He says, I'd love to get back into it, but I don't think he ever has.
No. No, he was really good.
Yeah.
A great play director.
Oh, and he was a great storyteller. Remember the jokes he used to tell?
Yeah.
God. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, he would have been a good guy. He'd have been great for kids all the way through. Every once in a while I would see him.
I see him down at we go to that St. Patrick's Day Mass at Garyon the last few years, and
run into him there.
Once in a while down there.
As the chemistry evolved, then we started at Honors Chem. And then, actually, the last 5 or 6 years, offered a college chem as a dual course with NICC.
Okay.
And that was fun to teach. I'd walk in and tell those kids, if I don't frustrate you in here, I haven't done my job.
Okay.
What do you mean, frustrate us? I said, well, I said, if you go to the weight room, how do you get stronger? You lift hard enough so that your muscles are frustrated or torn down and broken down to the point where they can't do anymore, and then when you come back, you're stronger. If you're a distance runner, how do you get yourself set to run better than ever? You run further and harder than you ever have before, and then the next time you're... I said, so that's what we're going to do with your brains. We're going to take them farther than we ever had before. And the only way we know we've done that is when you become frustrated. Now, when you relax and come back, you're going to be this much better than you were, you know, before. So,
you know, along that line, 1 year I took the student council, a few of the student council kids to a conference. I think it was in Waterloo. Anyway, Dan Gable spoke. And I had never been around Dan Gable before. But in essence, in the end, he said, and he was alluding it to wrestling. He said at the end of practice, he says, if you have enough strength to crawl out of the wrestling room, you haven't done enough. That's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, my God. I thought, oh, my God, this is, wow.
You know, most those kids that took college chem were good kids.
Yeah.
And as long as I warned them ahead of time, and they understood that was what... They didn't always like it.
Yeah.
But they understood where we were going with it.
Yeah.
They were going to be better because of it. But I had to take 2 classes at NIC, or at UNI, in order to do that. The first one was nanoscience, and I did it over the computer. They'd have the lectures. You'd do them online. And then I had to go over there for labs 5 Saturdays. So you'd go over, get there at 8, get out of there at 4, and do the lab over that time period. And that was a good class.
When did you do that, Jerry?
Oh, gosh. It was before we started that college chem, so it must have been like the late 2008-09, something like that.
Okay.
Middle 2000, between 2000 and 2010. Yeah. And then the second summer I went over and I had this, it was a RAISE project where they would actually pay me to work in the lab on a research project. So I was under Dr. Jeff Elbert. And we were trying to create a pigment that we could put in a Grazzo cell, which is really a solar cell, that would produce a certain amount of current. A Grazzo cell has raspberry juice in it. And then the titanium dioxide, when the raspberry juice is hit by the light, it causes that to kick out an electron, and then that's your current.
Okay.
But raspberry juice is organic, so it would disintegrate after a while. So we were trying to create an inorganic substance. So he gave me, this is what we're going to make. So we got to figure out how to get there. And he pretty much had the process figured out. But I'd have to, if it was something in the lab that was cheap, we just got it from the storeroom. But if it wasn't cheap, or they didn't have it or couldn't get it, then I had to make it. So, for 6 weeks, I'd walk in the lab at 8 and generally leave the lab about 4.
Wow.
You just spend your time in there. And some reactions might take 24 hours. So while that reaction's working and spinning, you'd be trying to figure out what to do to get the next step in or
okay.
or whatever it is. It was interesting. I learned that research scientists, the guys who succeed in doing what they want to do 20% of the time, they're the top-notch guys. 80% fail rate on every research project that they ever okay. tried to do.
They keep at it?
And yep. Got to be...
persistent?
Yep. In the end, I did get a little bit of current, so was successful, but the substance that I produced did not produce enough current to make it viable, at least at that point.
Yeah.
And then all your research and everything you did, you had to record everything you left there, and then somebody else had the opportunity later maybe pick it up or maybe look at it and say, nah.
Okay.
Or, okay. So I had to do that in order to be able to teach the college chem.
So did you stay with the AD's job then? Or?
Yep, all the way to the end. First, Lubeck was AD and principal. And then that was the assistant AD. And that's when Harold or Dave gave me that deal with the concession stand I ran.
Yeah.
I was in charge of transportation. Only ever had two screw-ups. And then just different things, like a lot of the wrestling organization for tournaments and stuff I did, all the track organization.
Yeah.
And then later, when John went down to the office and became the AD, that next year I stayed at what I was, and then the following year, maybe it was 2 years after that, Jeff said he was going to cut my position in half. And basically then what I was left with was the concession stand and then supervision.
Okay.
But then when I decided I was going to retire, basically they cut that AD job in half. So it went from a 10,000 stipend to a 5. I told Penner I was going to get out of football. When they hired Justin, Jasper was going to move up to defensive coordinator, and they kind of had everything all worked out. And then I get a text from Justin one day, be my D coordinator for one year. What's going on here? So I went down to Lubeck, and I said, John, what the heck's going on here? I don't know. Let me call Penner. Jasper just called me and said he's getting out. He's not going to do it. So Jasper got out, Wrestler got out. So now we're really scrambling because don't have any sophomore coaches, don't have any varsity assistant.
This is the year that Penner came in.
Yeah. So we're just scrambling there.
This is like
July,
yeah.
So called Danner, got him to be varsity assistant, or sophomore head, called Robbie, and Robbie said as long as Danner was the head, he'd come back and be the assistant. I took the defensive coordinator job. We got Corey Davidson, who was at the middle school, to come down and be the third varsity assistant, or the second varsity assistant, okay. third varsity coach. We got Nickel to come back and take freshman. Then Ronnie Kramer said he'd help him, and then Manning
okay.
jumped in there. But
boy, that was a shuffle.
it was. We didn't know for sure where we were going to be.
I remember because I got when Jeff came in. I got him on our league team for golf, and so I'd get all the commentary on what was going on, here periodically. And I remember he was scrambling to find a head coach.
Yeah. That was kind of interesting, too. They they actually asked me, they were thinking about hiring a guy from Hempstead. What was it? Ehlers. Mm. But he wouldn't be teaching here, he'd be teaching in there, and he wanted somebody at the high school to be like an assistant or a co or whatever. And they weren't real high on that, and then they said, why don't you just take it for 1 year? I said, well, that's foolish. Cool ran one system, I'm going to run another system, and now third year you're going to bring in another coach that's going to run a third system, most likely.
Yeah.
And I said, that to me, that just doesn't make sense. I said, I've been around Penn or some, you know, he was at the Beckman when Sarah Hoffman was throwing, and Heidi Tobin was throwing for Dyersville, for Beckman. And, you know, Justin would say, hey, coach, what do you do to this? Or, you know, and we'd go back and forth. Mm-hmm. The guy wanted to learn.
Yeah.
You know, he was green. And then he went to Carroll Kemper and had a couple good years there. And then he went to Mason City. And I kind of said, you know, what's wrong? Let's try Penner. And Dave said, yeah, I kind of, you know, I like the interview with him. I thought he was pretty good. But he said he'd send his kids to Seton until they're in high school. When they're in high school, they go to West Dubuque. Yeah. And some of those guys didn't like that too much. And I said, hey.
Wait a minute.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
That's what Casey Bryant does.
It's not a real big deal.
No. So then we kind of got past that and then ended up hiring him. And then all that other stuff broke up. And so I went back and did it the 1 year, and then I did it the second year. And I told Justin at the beginning, I said, this is the last year because I want to play golf and I want to do some of these things, and
yeah,
I can't do them. And,
so you got out 2 years ago?
Yeah.
So since then, what's been going on?
Corey Davidson took the head, so last year would have been the second year. And, you know, that's... he's done real well. And then Ryan Horner came in, and Andy Reinert, both of them came from senior, so they got two guys in here who had some good experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's gone real well.
But what I'm talking about, what about you since?
Oh.
You.
Well,
you're still subbing?
The reason they convinced me to get out was they cut the HRA by 25%. So... AD job cut in half, $5,000. Getting out of football, that's another $2,500 to $3,000. No way my high five's ever going to change. You know, because I've taken $8,000 out of that. Now you're going to take $15,000 out of the HRA? I'm a damn fool if I don't get out of here.
Yeah.
I still sub a lot. In, December, a little bit November. December, January, February, March. Anytime Andy's going to be gone, you know, he calls me because the one day I walked in, I says, what are we doing today? He says, limiting react. And he says, I got a couple worksheets there. He said, do you need anything else? I said, nope. Sometimes he'll leave a PowerPoint with some ideas on it. And, but he loses no curriculum, which is perfect. I get to teach chemistry again.
Okay.
The kids enjoy, you know, a different face, and everything works out good.
Okay.
I like the math. English is pretty good. I don't necessarily like the industrial arts courses, simply because those kids want to be working with their hands.
Yeah.
And they can't because I'm not certified. So generally they either have something to read, something to write, something they don't want to do. And it has nothing to do with...
Yeah.
I mean, they're in there to hands-on.
Yeah.
And they can't do it, so... And then mowing grass down a timberline.
Which I gotta... You like doing that quite a bit?
Yeah, it's... You know, it's just like anything else. I like to make the grass... I like to make it look good down there. You know, Justin was after me a couple times to come back and coach football again. You know, they're losing a couple guys. Well, Danner's going and Robbie, and come back and be sophomore or something. I said, Justin, there's only one way I can do it, and that's all in. and I don't want to be all in.
Yeah.
I want to be playing league golf on Wednesday nights instead of. So I said, no, it wouldn't be fair to you or the kids for me to come back and,
yeah,
you know, not do it that way. But it's the same way mowing grass.
Boy, there's a lot of grass to cut this year, isn't there?
Yeah. And it,
God.
You know, I cut that bottom down there yesterday. I'm sure that bottom probably got inundated again today.
Jeez,
it
yeah.
rained harder down there than it did when I got home. I got 17 cut today, so I'll get the rest of the hills probably cut tomorrow. But then we got to cut that bottom again. But boy, if we can't get in there.
Yeah. Well, we played Friday. I mean, that was pretty wet even.
Yep.
Then.
And it dries out pretty fast. But that silty stuff comes down out of that field. And
yeah, that's where it's muddy. And
and if you drive when that crap's wet, you just paste the grass right into it, and now
yeah.
it's going to die.
Yep. That's, well, I always ask people after we visited, so, okay, you've gone through everything, rehashed, whatever. Is there anything you'd been done differently? You had to do over again?
You know, not really a lot. There's probably some things I did later in my career that I could have done earlier if I'd have known better.
Okay.
You know, football and girls track, two totally different entities. But yet, once you got those girls on track, they do just about anything for you. Kind of the same thing with the football players. Once they understood what you wanted them to do and they could make sense of it.
Yeah.
Probably not a whole lot different in the classroom.
Yep.
You know, and SRAM and Al SRAM and Pat Flanagan were probably the first two greatest influences I had. And then pro, teaching me some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did some coaching at that time. Pat Murphy, who we went head-to-head as girls track coaches for all kinds of years after that.
Okay.
And, you know, and then just learning from being around Doc Scheel and Hine and
yeah.
you and Harold and Brian Heiduck and Wick.
Yeah.
And,